Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Seven Deadly Economic Sins: Obstacles to Prosperity and Happiness Every Citizen Should Know is a 2021 nonfiction book by philosopher and economist James R. Otteson. Written for a general audience rather than specialists, it explains a set of recurring economic fallacies that distort public debate and personal judgment. Otteson uses the language of sin as a metaphor. The sins are not moral failings in the ordinary religious sense, but mistaken assumptions about how markets, wealth, inequality, and government actually work. The book is designed to be accessible to readers who may have strong opinions about economic issues, but limited formal training in economics. Its purpose is to show why common errors lead to waste, loss, and reduced prosperity, and why clearer economic reasoning can support both material well-being and social peace. The framing is philosophical as well as economic, connecting market exchange to moral agency, voluntary cooperation, and the conditions for human flourishing. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the book treats economic sin as a category of mistaken thinking, not moral vice. Otteson's central move is to recast economic controversy in moral language without reducing economics to morality alone. The seven sins are fallacies, meaning patterns of thought that seem intuitive but produce bad conclusions about prosperity and policy. This framing matters because many debates about markets are driven less by evidence than by habits of suspicion, envy, or oversimplification. By calling them sins, Otteson signals that these errors are serious and recurring, not merely technical mistakes. The book therefore works as a corrective to public reasoning. It asks readers to examine assumptions before defending conclusions. That approach also distinguishes the book from a standard economics primer. Instead of organizing around supply and demand models or policy tools, it organizes around intellectual traps. The result is a book that combines ethical reflection with economic analysis, aiming to change how readers judge claims about markets, inequality, intervention, and business conduct. Secondly, wealth creation is presented as positive sum exchange rather than zero sum struggle. A major theme in the book is the rejection of the idea that one person's gain must come from another person's loss. Otteson argues that market exchange is usually positive sum because both sides voluntarily participate only when they expect to benefit. This is one of the book's most important practical insights, since zero sum thinking often underlies hostility toward trade, profit, and business. The book emphasizes mutual benefit, specialization, and cooperation as the real sources of wealth creation. It also uses the opt-out idea to test whether an interaction is genuinely exploitative. If a participant can freely leave an exchange, then the arrangement is not simply extraction. This line of reasoning is meant to show why markets can expand wealth without requiring coercion. By challenging zero-sum thinking, Otteson tries to shift attention away from redistribution alone and toward the processes that generate value in the first place. That makes the book especially relevant to readers interested in entrepreneurship, trade, and the ethics of exchange. Thirdly, markets are defended as powerful institutions, but not as flawless systems. The book does not argue that markets are perfect. In fact, one of its seven fallacies is the belief that markets work flawlessly. Otteson acknowledges that markets can produce collective action problems, externalities, and situations in which outcomes are imperfect or contested. His point is more specific: criticizing market imperfections does not justify abandoning markets as a whole. The book asks readers to compare real-world alternatives rather than judge markets against an unreal ideal. This is an important distinction because much public discourse treats any imperfection as proof of systemic failure. Otteson instead argues that markets have enabled more prosperity than any other known system because they coordinate dispersed knowledge and channel voluntary action. The practical implication is that reform should be evidence-based and selective, not driven by blanket distrust. By holding two ideas together, that markets are deeply useful and still limited, the book occupies a middle position between market romanticism and anti-market ideology. Fourthly, government intervention is evaluated by function, not by reflexive trust. Another important dimension of the book is its treatment of government. Otteson rejects two opposite errors: the belief that government can effortlessly solve every market failure, and the belief that government should always intervene whenever markets appear imperfect. His analysis encourages readers to ask what intervention can actually accomplish, what unintended consequences it may create, and whether it improves on existing arrangements. This is a more disciplined standard than either idealized free market dogma or automatic state-centered thinking. The book's approach is especially useful in policy debates because it does not assume that the mere presence of a problem justifies a particular solution. Instead, it stresses institutional comparison and realistic trade-offs. Otteson's broader argument is that public policy should preserve the cooperative gains of markets while recognizing that some problems may require targeted correction. The emphasis on function over ideology makes the book relevant to readers trying to evaluate regulation, subsidies, and welfare policy without reducing economics to partisan slogans. Lastly, inequality, poverty, and moral progress are treated as related but distinct concerns. The book gives careful attention to inequality and growth, warning against two common confusions that inequality is inherently bad in itself, and that growth is automatically good, regardless of what it does for people. Bodison's position is that material inequality may matter in some contexts, but it should not distract from the more urgent question of whether people are being lifted out of absolute poverty. In this view, market expansion is morally significant because it has increased access to goods, opportunities, and exchange for large numbers of people. The book also links prosperity to reduced violence and greater peace, suggesting that economic growth is valuable when it broadens participation in voluntary exchange rather than simply increasing aggregate output. This is one of the book's strongest analytical contributions because it refuses simplistic moral accounting. It asks readers to distinguish relative from absolute conditions and to judge economic systems by their long-term effects on ordinary people. That makes the book especially useful for readers who want a moral vocabulary for discussing development without collapsing into slogans about equality or growth. In conclusion, this book is best suited for general readers, students, policymakers, and non-economists who want a clearer framework for thinking about markets and public policy. It does not assume technical training, and that makes it unusually accessible for a work that still engages serious economic ideas. Readers who are tired of polarized debates about inequality, intervention, profit, and capitalism will find that Odison offers a structured way to test common claims rather than simply endorse a political camp. Its main benefit is intellectual discipline. It helps readers identify bad assumptions before they shape judgments about real policy choices. It also has practical value for anyone making decisions in business, civic life, or personal finance because it encourages attention to voluntary exchange, unintended consequences, and the difference between market imperfections and market failure. What sets it apart from many books in the same genre is its philosophical framing. Instead of presenting economics only as a toolbox of models, it treats economic reasoning as part of moral and civic life. That combination of accessibility, conceptual clarity, and ethical seriousness is the book's distinctive strength. If you would like to support James R. Odison, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.